Okay, so yes, I'm Nate. This is a CPP reference talk, take two. So you know, we have some pretty good documentation today for C++. There's a lot of stuff out there. There's lots of books, many of whom have authors that are actually around and within 200 feet of us right now. There's websites, there's groups, there's all sorts of things that have happened that exist today that are pretty great. This little one here is, of course, CPP reference, and that's the one that I wanted to talk about today. And kind of the question that I think it made sense to start with was basically, how did we get to this point? How did we get to where we are today? And so in order to do that, I'm going to take us back in time a little bit and go back to the 2000s, to the 90s, to the 80s. Awesome mustache, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that in the corner. To the 70s. Fantastic 70s, where this character, who you might have seen out in the hallways, came up with a little thing called C with Classes. So in 1979, this was, I guess, over in New Jersey, Stroessrup came up with C with Classes, which was kind of this way to solve the problem that he had with Simula not being fast enough, and he needed to do a bunch of modeling things. He described the process of coming up with this as exactly what you might think. It was kind of an individual project that he came up with that started off with just something that he was into, and it kind of gradually evolved over time into a larger and larger beast that we're familiar with today. A lot of the initial construction of it wasn't really specified clearly, certainly not through a standards document. They didn't originally go to the ISO and say, yes, we're going to make an international standard for this thing. It was more just a project that he came up with that evolved kind of organically. One of the initial things that got written about it was in 1980 when there was an internal labs, Bell Labs tech report, which was titled Classes and Abstract Data Type Facility for the C Language, which then in 1982 got released as an external tech report, which is one of the first external publications about C with Classes, or what became C++. In 1984, the C++ Reference Manual, these are all publications that Bjarne wrote, and C++ Programming Language in 1986 is kind of the first canonical description of the language, the first documentation for C++. One point about this, and these are all quotes from like the Design and Evolution of C++, which is a great book if you're interested in learning more about kind of not the what is C++, but more the why is it and when did it happen. If you're interested in those kind of secondary questions, Design and Evolution is a great book. Writing tutorials was something that was right from the beginning considered kind of an essential design tool, and that's something that I feel like we've pulled into the modern documentation, at least on CPP reference, a lot. I'm going to skip ahead a few years. 1989, we started seeing some standardization efforts because this process of describing the language became popular enough that it became actually useful to get people to define it. And the first standardization was ANSI, and then it eventually started going up to an ISO level standardization, even though ANSI and ISO were kind of tacked together for a lot of that time. Around in 1990 was when the reference manual work kind of got handed over to an actual first C++ committee or whatever. Up until then, from 1979 all the way to 1990, it was just kind of more of an informal thing. The annotated reference manual was something that also I thought it was interesting, was not something that was made kind of individually. There was a lot of community input into it, which is also something that we're going to touch on in a little bit. So having community feedback was essential when this project started getting big. And of course, there's things like Usenet, which Complang C++ produced tons of messages to the delight and despair of all the readers, which I thought was kind of funny. So yeah, this is great. So that takes us up all the way to maybe around 1998. It's kind of a whirlwind timeline of what exactly happened with C++ standardization and documentation. And around 1998, when there finally was the first ISO standards, there were a fair number of books and journals and user groups that were devoted to C++. This is about the time when yours truly was in college and kind of a poor undergrad, and I was trying to learn C++, and a lot of my friends were as well. And it was great that there were lots of expensive books and conferences that people could go to, but not everyone can fly around the world and go to these things, and not everyone can afford the expensive books and whatnot. So this this material for this, you know, describing C++ wasn't necessarily that accessible. This is also around the time of the dot-com boom. You might remember, you know, pets.com and all those fun things happening. So of course, the internet. This is great. This is 1998. This is 2000. What can we do if we want to make some sort of, egalitarian, accessible source of information? Let's put it on the internet. So yeah. So I had graduated college around this time, and I was sitting around, and I had found like the Java documentation that Sun had was pretty useful. I don't know if you guys ever, I think it's actually still fairly similar, but at the time it was a little unusual to have that complete description of an API just, you know, put online and freely available. And I remember wishing that there was something similar for C++. And I remember stumbling across SGI's documentation and kind of being frightened and scared by like the detail, the level of detail that was there, because it was very complete and very accurate, but also not necessarily beginner friendly or easy to parse at first glance. So it's a little like, you know, someone coming up to you with the standard and hitting you on the head with it and being like, yes, all the information is here, but you know, sure, it's technically true, but you know, getting information out of the standard is not always that easy. So I just graduated from college. I was working at a job doing tech support, living in Boston, and I didn't know anybody in that town, so I had a little too much time on my hands. So, you know, I thought, let's make a website. This is what you do, and it's like the year 2000. The person that I wanted to target the website at was someone who was something similar to myself, probably. Someone who is average, who's probably time constrained. These aren't necessarily going to be language lawyers that need to have this kind of documentation out there, right? The standard already exists for people who are going to be looking, who are able to parse it if that's what they have in mind. Target users often have other things going on that they need to worry about, like, you know, fires that need to get put out or whatever. It's not always in their interest to spend, you know, days poring over the subtleties of a language standard to understand what they want to get done. So the goals became something that was quick, simple, minimalist. I wanted to have lots of easy to understand summaries. Examples were something that were key, and this kind of touches on what Struestrup was mentioned in his in the earlier quote of having tutorials, because I think, at least personally, a lot of the times when I want to like learn something, it's just really useful to see it somewhere in action, as opposed to just seeing a description of what it could do. And I wanted to keep the content simple, but it also would be nice to be able to have kind of links to more in-depth things when necessary, although maybe it would be nice to kind of hide them or make them not the first thing that you stumble across. So, rich content only when needed, and obviously, if you're making a website, having cross-links is great. Being able to, you know, jump around from vector to map and blah blah blah. That's a useful thing. So yeah, those were kind of the high-level goals of setting up the site. So yeah, I registered the domain. It was in 2000. One of the first things that kind of became obvious as I was, you know, trying to type in what amounted to a ridiculous amount of information into the site, it was a lot of data entry, was that I was repeating myself a lot. I mean, if you think of functions like size, which appear everywhere in the standard library, at least, you know, vector, map, everybody's got a size method. And after you've written it like four times, you're like, you know, maybe I don't really need to do this anymore. So being the genius that I was like, I know Perl. Let's just make a little templating system and, you know, have some text files and only write size once and then blah, blah, blah. You know, I can convert the text file into, you know, that describes size and substitute some parameters and it'll be great. It'll generate the documentation automatically. Everybody likes Perl. So this was 2000 when everybody did like Perl. So that was okay. And I set up the website and I started getting some traffic. So this graph, which I'll fill out a little bit more later, shows like the number of unique visitors per month. And so around 2000, you know, I started getting actual people visiting the website. It's hilarious. All right. It's great. It was great. Unfortunately, yeah, Pearl. So as much as I like Pearl, there is some joke about line noise that I tried to find here. But yeah, it got a little old dealing with a bunch of Perl scripts, especially those made by, you know, someone just fresh out of college. So I wasn't like a Unix graybeard Perl hacker or anything like that. So I retired the templating system shortly after using it to produce most of the content. It did its job. It allowed me to kind of, you know, get the initial cut of the website up. But I didn't use it to continue to develop the website because it proved just way too burdensome to deal with the language. So that's great. Time passes. I start seeing more people visiting the website. We're up to 2002 now. So at this point, the Perl that had generated all the static HTML was great. The HTML, unfortunately, was having similar growing pains. It's not necessarily that much fun to type in lots of angle brackets all over the place. And keep in mind, this is around, what, 2002, when IE6 is in kind of in heyday, and you have all these different, you know, browsers, and you're trying to do compatibility between them, and, you know, IE is going one direction, and Firefox is going another direction, or even if it existed then, Mozilla is going another direction. Cross-browser support was horrible, and I was trying to do all this by hand, which was not a lot of fun. Also, I mean, there was a reason, the original reason for doing kind of a Perl script-based templating system to generate all this content, there was a good reason for that. There was a lot of repetition in structure, and every time I wanted to change, you know, the size function, I did have to go and change it in a whole bunch of places and check all the CSS and, you know, type in less than greater than with slashes all over the place. So that was not a lot of fun. So HTML had its own problems. So what do you do when HTML has problems? Well, you look around and you see the newest cute technology out there, which in this case was a content management system. So Joomla and Drupal were kind of these systems that were coming alive around then, and everybody liked them. So of course, I decided to make my own because, you know, why not, right? This is fun. You can code up something in PHP and MySQL, and, you know, I didn't really want to deal with other people's code because dealing with other people's code is some version of hell. So I decided to make my own version of hell. And yeah, thanks to Abstruse Goose for this slide. So yeah, now we're running a custom content management system, and the site continues to grow. We keep on getting more and more unique users per month. This is exciting, and this takes us up to 2008. Yeah.
What are the numbers on the left of the screen?
So the y-axis, you mean?
The y-axis.
Yeah. So that's, sorry, I didn't do a good job of labeling my axes. That's number of unique users, unique visitors who visited the site per month. Yeah, so by this point, we're at, you know, roughly maybe 200,000 unique visitors per month, which is, you know, exciting. So there's some problems, though, that we haven't solved yet. And that is that there's a lot of people who saw the site and were like, this is great. You know, there's a lot of documentation up here. I found something that's wrong. You should fix it. And they'd send me some edit, you know, or they'd send me, you know, you should document this whole section of things that I'd forgotten or I'd missed or something. Let's add a language reference in addition to a standard library reference. And they'd send me large chunks of stuff. And, you know, I'm only one person, and I was in grad school at this time. And in theory, I should have been, you know, finishing grad school instead of working on the website or rebuilding it for the nth time. So, yeah, I was becoming a bottleneck. And this led to crushing guilt. And crushing guilt is not a good thing. So what you see here is a graph of the popularity of the term wiki or Wikipedia over time. And this font is incredibly tiny, but this is around 2008 and this is 2004. So by the time 2008 rolled around, this is kind of when Wikipedia was starting to really start to get lots of popular press and attention throughout the world. So it seemed like a natural answer to the question of how I can make it easier for others to contribute was to make this into a wiki. So yeah, crowdsourcing. That was the exciting verb, I think, at the time that everyone used. It seemed to be working for Wikipedia. And I decided to grab a piece of software called DokuWiki or DokuWiki, depending on how you pronounce it. It's a wiki package that was very simple. It basically, instead of having databases and things behind it, it wrote all of its data as flat text files in the file system. So installing it was very easy, maintaining it was very easy. Inserting content into it was very easy because you could just, you know, on the command line, use things to create these text files, and you didn't have to like interact with databases. It also had kind of a minimalist appearance, which was one of those goals that I set up for myself when I originally started this. I like the idea of keeping things as simple as possible, with the idea being that you don't want to have obstacles between the programmer and the actual answer to the programmer's question. So yeah, let's go for wiki. So there's some interesting things that happen when you keep on basically restructuring your site by rebuilding it over and over and over. Sometimes search engines don't always like it when you just change all of your pages and then issue thousands of redirects to just slightly different pages. It can mess with their ranking algorithms. So we kind of had a little hiccup here after the switch to DokuWiki in terms of PageRank. It dropped off several places for a lot of different popular search queries, which was a little unfortunate. But you know, I was willing to take these kinds of hits in the name of progress, I guess. So the content was still there. It just fell behind like C++.com a little bit. So whatever. As long as the information is still there, that's mostly the important thing. Yeah. So right. Living dangerously. Not only because you take hits in PageRank, but also because every time I rewrite the website, I also have to worry about not graduating or finishing my degree ever. It's exciting stuff. So around this time, and I should stop and actually mention that this isn't just me who's doing this all this time. Like I said, there were people throughout this process who would be emailing me and be like, oh yeah, here's some more content. Around this time, a guy who was very helpful sent me a message and basically convinced me that we needed to switch to MediaWiki instead of DokuWiki. MediaWiki is the software that Wikipedia runs, and it's, as you might imagine, Wikipedia is a fairly popular website. They have a lot of stuff going for them. They have a lot of users. There's been a lot of development on MediaWiki. There's a lot of plugins. So there's some pretty good arguments for switching to switching to MediaWiki, and he was able to convince me by more or less completely creating the entire website and then pulling in all the content. And so we worked together with him doing almost all the work to rewrite the website one more time, this time as a MediaWiki-based website instead of a DokuWiki-based website. So there's tons of powerful templates in MediaWiki. And of course, as C++ programmers, you know, what could go wrong with templates? It's something. So this is a little snippet from the Grand C++ Error Competition or Explosion Competition. This little snippet here, I think, won the prize for a most surprising template-based error of making the compiler explode. It's kind of hilarious. I think it generates gigabytes of error messages before the compiler seg faults or something like that. Yeah. So templates, those are fun. But with great power comes great responsibility. So this is an example of what, say, for example, vector size might look like, the actual page running under MediaWiki. And this is current. This is as of today or something, yesterday probably. The actual code for it is, this doesn't look too bad, but maybe that's because I'm used to seeing it. There's a lot of templates that are involved in this. So if you actually go and try to edit the page, which anyone can do because CPP Reference is a publicly editable site, this is what you see. Some of this looks okay. I mean, you can see chunks of text. Some of this is a little confusing, and I've left out a chunk on the bottom that has some conditional template inclusion, which is even scarier. But just on this little page that you see right here, there's 60 templates that are used just to generate that particular page. And each of those templates can include even more sub-templates. So the complexity of this can be a little bit of a problem. One of the first comments that we got from somebody who saw the newest version of the site was that it was nice, but the templates are a little bit insane. And this is a problem because we want people to be able to jump in and change the site and improve things. So one of the ways we tried to address this was by adding documentation to the templates. So for example, there's these DSC templates, which we use for a lot of our lists. And you can see there's like a little line here that describes kind of, DSCs are for the creation of member variable or function lists. There's little documentation for all of the different templates. We also tried to make a more gentle path into the website in terms of like getting people used to stuff. There's a whole page that basically says, if you want to contribute by adding examples, here's all the pages that don't have examples or that are tagged as missing examples. Often adding examples is one of the easiest things to do because you're usually not trying to add a conditional formatting or templates. You're basically just putting a chunk of code up on the website and saying, blah, there you go. Still, templates are a problem. If you have the whole site being way too heavily templated, then you're gonna scare people away, and it's gonna be hard to code. And this is just like the normal problem that we all face as programmers, right? If you try to abstract away way too much, sure, you have very abstract code and it's very modular, but like it takes you years to actually find like the ground truth of where the work is actually done. You have to go through 14 virtual function calls in order to get to the actual thing that's working. So we have a similar problem here, which really isn't that surprising. It's an issue of balance. So right now we're kind of bouncing back from super templates and trying to get back a little more to the other side of things. Vandalism was really interesting, and I totally expected when I first set up the DokuWiki version of the site was that we would have tons of problems with vandalism. There would be just, you know, stupid kids would have, you know, jokes about, you know, stupid kid things, and they'd put them up on the website, and it would be a huge problem. But for whatever reason, and I still don't know exactly why this is, vandalism has really not been a problem. I think perhaps we don't have contentious types of pages, like there's no, you know, W. Bush page on CPP reference that you might have people arguing back and forth about, or, you know. There's also ground truth, like there's kind of an appeal to authority, like you can go and look at the standard and you can pretty much find right or wrong answers to almost any question that's going to come up, so there's not a lot of like bickering back and forth between people. We also have captures that we've installed to just kind of try to make simple edits, you know, like you're going to have to at least understand what, you know, std::cout pcf is going to print to the screen. So this is useful. And all these things have basically made it, okay, yeah. So one thing that is still a bit of a question mark is there's a stupefying number of new user registrations. This is users that have registered with the the CPP reference site itself. You create a user account and then you don't have to like enter a captcha anymore. There's a consistent flow of new user registrations, and like maybe 97% of them are never used for anything else, but they just keep on getting registered new users over and over and over, which really confuses me because you do have to pass the captcha in order to create a new user account. So either people out there really just like creating accounts, or there's some sort of weird bot that's hitting the site. I looked at the data for a while and I couldn't find any pattern. It was geographically dispersed. It's a little confusing, but they don't seem to do anything. There's tons of these accounts. They're all very silent. So maybe unless someday they just all launch, you know, together and do some DDoS on, you know, so I don't even know how it would work, but, you know, like something horrible could happen, and it might be my fault at some point in the future. So if CPP reference attacks your site, then it's probably because of these new registration accounts. But for now, the vandalism doesn't seem to be a problem. I really can't even remember incidents of people putting something up that's like dumb or stupid. Much more prevalent are helpful vandalism, where people try to add things that that just aren't correct, or they try to fix the style to match their favorite style, which, you know, we try to basically enforce a uniform style throughout the site, just, you know, for consistency. And people who try to deviate from that either on purpose or just accidentally because they don't realize that we have a style guideline, that's kind of more common. Or just introducing new big chunks of content that have problems. That's also something. I wouldn't even call it vandalism because I want to encourage that. I'd rather have people introducing big chunks of content and then having us be able to go and fix it up rather than having people be afraid to introduce new content. So yeah, there's also the issue of trust. So it's a publicly editable wiki. And you know, as such, there's this interesting idea that, you know, there really could be anything up there. If you don't look too closely at it, you may not realize that it's publicly editable. If you don't come to CPPCon, you might not realize that, like, me is the person who's just behind this website. You might think that, you know, Bjarne is, like, actually, like, you know, authorizing all of the edits or something. He's not. But for some reason, for better or worse, I feel like it's working. Like, I feel like we have a fairly reliable source of content. I mean, one of the things that makes it easier is that we do release all of the content Creative Commons. So like if you wanted to get all of the data, you could grab it yourself, you could put up your own copies of the site. It's very liberally licensed, if licensed at all, really. So yeah. Yeah, more memes. So I have a few minutes left here before this half hour's up. So the stuff that we're heading for in the future, content is obviously a big thing, keeping up with the new standard activity, especially now that we're releasing standards every 3 years, C++ 11, 14, 17, maybe 20. all of this increased frantic activity in standards has been fun because now we have a lot more data to enter and a lot more things to track. We also are trying to track some of the technical specifications that are coming out that aren't even part of the standard, but presumably will be at some point. And we're doing pretty good. I think we're C++ 14 complete, and I think we have some C++ 17 content, although I might be lying about that. I'm trying to remember now. But I think we're definitely up to C++ 14, which is pretty nice. And then the tech specs, which eventually will become, you know, presumably parts of future standard specs. Those are some, at least some of those are in, like the file system TS is part of the content we have. So that should be easy to move over when and if it actually makes it into the standard. Doing translations into multiple languages isn't something I've talked about, but that's something that we've tried to do. We seeded all the content for these alternate language wikis with just the Google Translate version of the text, which was kind of a neat idea, but unfortunately it's also kind of poisoned the results for everyone who approaches the site from a non-English standpoint, because they get, instead of the nice English version, they get the somewhat horribly translated like German version, for example, and then they're like, this is shite, this is no good, you know. And then they get upset. So I'm still trying to figure out how best to do translations. And we're also looking into expanding into tutorials, maybe covering Boost content, although these are all things that are big kind of commitments that I don't want to get into without without spending too much, without having kind of a person who can really drive it. So if I have a few minutes left, I'm going to try to do just a live demo. This is going to go great, I'm sure. So we have, for example, a little widget right now that can track the different versions of content. So on this wiki, you can see this thing here. We have, maybe I can increase the screen size a little bit. We have different versions of std vector arrays. In C++ 11, we went from an iterator to a const iterator. So the default version that you might see is kind of a diff where you'll see both of these versions. But with this little drop down, you can make it so that if you're viewing the C++ 98 version of the standard, you'll only see C++ 98 content, and C++ 11 and 14 will show you the more modern versions. So having something that allows you to see these different versions of the standard is kind of an interesting way to go, especially as we keep on accumulating newer and newer versions of the standard. Tracking how these diffs work is a tricky problem. We also have, and I don't know how many people have noticed this, but there's the ability to run code live inside the browser. So you could say, hello, cppcon, inside this little thing. Maybe we want to run this as Clang. And if I have internet connectivity, I should be able to click run here. And down at the bottom, we get the output streamed back to this website. So if you wanted to play around with examples, you don't have to copy and paste over to IDE1 or to your, you know, Vim window or whatever. You can actually just mess around with things in the browser, which is, I think, kind of a neat idea. I'm not exactly sure if it's going to be, you know, not going to do all of your development inside a CPP reference tab or something. But like, if you're just curious about how, you know, std vector arrays works, you could maybe play around with it here as opposed to having to, you know, copy and paste, which seems like a nice thing. So yeah, this is pretty much it. That's the two things I wanted to talk about. And yeah. Thanks. There's a couple of users who did a lot of the recent work, P12 and Cubby, who have helped out a lot recently. And of course, all of the people who contribute edits to the site, well done. Good job. It's publicly editable. Go and add content. If you see something that's wrong, fix it up. And thanks. I don't know if we have any time for questions or we're a little over, but if you want to stick around, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, it's mostly just a project that I work on kind of for myself.
It's just unbelievable, I think, except for especially, and I tell you why it came to depend on it, was it started having content on C14, for which the only other document I had was the standards document, which is okay, but it's a little obtuse. And so, you know, I don't know what to say. I don't think this is nearly as widely appreciated as it should be.
All right, well, you know, tell your friends. All right, thank you. Yeah, what's up?
How do you handle debug reports?
So So originally, they were just like emailed to me, and that was a horrible problem, right? Now, defect reports typically take the place of people either just directly making edits to a page and being like, this is wrong, or they might just go to the talk page. Oh, I'm sorry, do you mean like official standard defect reports? Sorry. That's a good question. I think the direction, this is something that we basically have had to come to a consensus on, the people who have been like making the most recent changes. I think what we're doing right now is incorporating defect reports into the C++, for example, 11 view or whatever, so you would see that. Hold on, let me go behind you. Yeah.
So I just want to second that I really love this. I have one kind of minor complaint.
Yeah.
Whenever I bring it up,
No text. I'm pretty sure that's a Chrome bug, which there's. It happened. Well, okay. So they're both using like the Gecko whatever engine, right? Underneath or whatever something. No. Okay. I don't know. For a while, at least, there was a well-documented Chrome bug that had this problem, and actually, I think they fixed it recently. And so, if it's still happening, if it's happening in Safari, this could be something separate. But you should leave a note on like one of the talk pages. For example, the main page has a talk page saying, you know, that you're seeing it and what browser you're using. And you know, right now that's basically our bug tracking system is the talk pages for all these things. Yeah. I have no idea. I think as long as information is like up there, I'm happy, and if it comes from wherever, as long as it's mildly authoritative, like yeah, I don't know. I try not to get into a competitive thing with like other sites. So mostly, hopefully, you know, if people link to it and whatnot, it'll keep on improving and keep on being better and better. And yeah.
Can you make a living from this?
No, I do not. This is a net negative for me, but I tried running ads for a while, but I didn't really like the idea of having big ads splashed on it. I thought it kind of detracted from it. And honestly, web hosting costs for a site like this are only going to be like, you know, maybe at most $30 or $40 a month, which, you know, whatever.
It just disturbs me that somebody can do something that's this good and so indispensable that they can't make a living
I briefly ran ads on the site on only like maybe 10 pages, some of the most trafficked pages, and there was like a reasonable income that I got from that, but I just didn't look into it too much because
I can see that dilutes it also.
Yeah, exactly.
I would be hope for something else, but nothing occurs to me.
Yeah. We have a donate page actually. So if you feel like donating, you know, I think Bitcoin or buying merchandise off of a little store where I put up a bunch of mugs and things.
Looked at it, put in $5, you'd be a wealthy man.
That's very possible. You can buy merchandise that has really bad pun filled things on it.
One-third of minimum wage, I probably would owe you $1,000 by now.
Oh, thank you very much. Any other questions? All right.